Fox here. We'd like to offer you, Greg Monroe, a 2-year maximum contract with a 1-year player option, please. Do you accept?
Apparently, I'd rather play there than play with a team that's a little further away from contention.
Yeah, this is big news, right? They outstripped the Knicks. They outstripped the Lakers. They beat Portland's offer as well. And Greg Monroe is going to play center for Milwaukee for at least the next 2 years, unless he gets traded. So that was quite a coup for the Bucks. I mean, they wanted to. I mean, I think he's even in some ways a better fit there than Tyson Chandler would have been. So they kind of got a great target here. Congratulations to them.
Yeah, it's going to be a great test of the importance of center defense in a system kind of like what the Bucks do, because Monroe is not the greatest. I think he's a little bit maybe even underrated defensively because he's been playing out of position. But the Bucks have a very different set of constraints, and I think his offensive skills will be wonderful for them.
Yeah, some of his advanced numbers at center weren't as bad. I mean, he's not, for a center, he's not completely immobile, not going to get off the ground and block some shots. But when you consider all the athletes they have around him, on the other hand, you know, a lot of that Bucks defense was built without Jabari Parker. I think that people might be overrating a little bit what they're going to be able to do defensively this year with him. I mean, that front court of Parker at the 4 and Monroe at the 5, maybe not that great. But if you have Giannis and you have Chris Middleton and you have Michael Carter-Williams around them, maybe you can say that they're going to be better. I do think they are going to miss Jared Dudley, though, who they basically traded away for nothing.
That was shocking to me because Dudley was a very useful piece for them, and I thought he would have more value than a trade exception and an eventual second-round pick, which Washington has apparently been trading like they were. I don't know what gets traded. That Luke Ridnour. They've been trading him like they were Luke Ridnour because they gave up 2 to move up to get Kelly Oubre, and then they just gave up 1 for Jared Dudley. That might be different with protections, but I think Jared Dudley's far better than that.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I was surprised that he opted in, frankly. I thought that he could do better than his $4.7 million player option this year anyway. He opted in, apparently, at least from the Bucks' perspective. They viewed him as essentially dead seller. I mean, who are they going to get for $4.7 million who's going to be better than him next year?
Yeah, and also Jared Dudley turns 30 in a week from today. So it's not like he's going to be sitting there and say, hey, the market's going to be amazing for me next year. There will be a lot more money just generally just with the space, but I'm very surprised with basically everything that's happened with him.
Yeah, I am too. And I mean, he was very good as a small ball power forward for them. It's interesting that maybe they feel like with Jabari there, he's not going to get as many minutes, but still, as someone who can provide some shooting with kind of the non-shooters that they have at the 1, and, you know, Giannis is supposed to be getting better, but, you know, they like his form. He's been reworking his form, but he's certainly nowhere near there yet for being a 3-point shooter. Jabari struggled from the 3-point line last year. Maybe he'll be better after kind of taking all you can do really is shoot when you're coming off an ACL, so maybe that'll help him be able to shoot the NBA 3, but he shoots more of a jump shot too, so he can't really practice that as well as you can a set shot when you've got the ACL injury. So yeah, I mean, it was very surprising to me, and maybe the thinking is, all right, with that $4.7 million, we can lock someone in for a little bit longer. You know, we're not really trying to be good next year because we're still trying to develop Jabari and give him and Giannis all the minutes they can handle, and if we lock someone else in for 4.7 beyond next year when they get into the hyperinflated market. Maybe that's the thinking, but I'm really curious to see who that'll be. Maybe they'll, I mean, who's even left on the market right now who's better than Dudley? I should say this aside, we're putting like the correct numbers here because Greg Monroe is the great score, but it didn't make sense to me. Who's left now that they're going to get for that amount of money that would be better than Dudley?
Yeah, I definitely don't think they're going to be getting somebody better than Dudley. Maybe they'd be getting somebody. We talked about the benefit of a long-term player. Also, you know, I was thinking about them. I still am in the mindset of, oh, like they need a backup point guard until I remembered they gave up a first-round pick for 1 year of Gravis Vasquez. So I don't know that they're in the market for that either.
No, they aren't. I mean, I guess the only thing I would look at would be maybe like a heat-up-off-the-bench kind of scoring guy and just do do a better job than Jared Bayless, perhaps. I don't know, but I don't think that 4.7 is going to get you Lou Williams. Rodney Sucky, he'll probably go for that as well. Maybe like a Gerald Green type, or maybe they're just, I don't know. Maybe they will just leave that space open that they could trade for someone around the deadline. I'm not really sure, but whatever it is, I don't think that it's necessarily better than what they would have gotten with Dudley. But that said, I mean, this is still one of the best options that, that they just got on the market in Monroe. Someone who can operate from the high post, let Jabari or Giannis use some post-ups as well, get guys going backdoor a lot. I still worry a little bit about their spacing, but, I mean, he's just such an upgrade offensively over someone like Pachulia, Larry Sanders, even who was there for a little bit last year, John Henson. So, yeah, I mean, you got to love this move overall. And just the Dudley thing doesn't make any sense to me. Because I think they they have the space to sign Monroe even with Dudley, right?
As far as I can tell, as I can tell, they did. And so I love the Monroe part of it, especially for them that he's not on a long-term commitment, because if you think about whether he opts out or doesn't opt out, they're in a nice spot where their young guys are real cheap and they're going to be cheap for a while. So he gives you a benefit now without having to worry about the complicated situation like what Miami's having to deal with of how are we going to pay all these guys. And, I expect right now, if I had to make the decision, that he'll opt out of that third year. But at the same time, his early bird rights will be enough that if they really want to bring him back and he wants to come back, they can make that happen.
I will say I wouldn't have minded if they had gone for someone, a backup point guard type in the draft. Man, I know they like Rashad Vaughn and he can shoot it.
Oh, yeah, agreed.
But, when you've got Middleton, those three guys on the wing, taking maybe another lottery ticket at point guard, and a point guard who projects to be able to shoot pretty well. I mean, that's, when you think about really this team long term, right? You've got Jabari, you got Giannis, those are guys who are going to have the ball in their hands a lot. Chris Middleton can space the floor. Monroe now not really a shooter, outside of the immediate basket area, not a good jump shooter. So having someone who can shoot competently at point guard, who's part of your long-term core, I think is going to be critical. I would expect ultimately that Michael Carter-Williams will not end up here long-term unless he just really, really fixes his jump shot, because it's just going to be hard to really let the skills of Monroe and Parker and Giannis really reach their full potential when you can just help off the point guard with impunity.
Yeah, and when you're the lowest guy on the totem pole, which I think Michael Carter-Williams is among those players, then you're the one who's the most liable to be moved. And also because there are guys who play that position who have the skill set that they would be looking for. It's not like you're looking for a genuine rarity. You're looking for a point guard who can shoot, who can also, capably, run an offense when you need it. That's nice to have. There are a lot of teams that are looking for it, but it's not this like unicorn thing that you're seeking out.
Yeah. I mean, I think like someone like Patrick Beverley type of skill set, I think would be pretty good for that. Maybe a little bit better a shooter than that. I mean, Giannis has some point guard skills, but they worked on him playing point guard in summer league kind of for that reason. And Jabari, another guy who can create for himself off the dribble, and Monroe's a real good passer. So maybe you don't need so much playmaking as you need shooting at that position long term. But all right, we're digressing a little bit. I mean, great move for the Bucks. We'll have to, when all the dust settles, we'll have to see where they kind of fit into the hierarchy in the Eastern Conference. But I think, they've looking pretty solidly like a playoff team, assuming that Jason Kidd and Sean Sweeney as lead defensive assistant can work their magic with the defense with that Parker Monroe front court. So when we get to the Wizards real quickly, they lost Paul Pierce, but they got Dudley basically for free into a trade exception. That's why you have those. And that now they also have their mid-level exception. Talk is that they're pushing to maybe get David Wesley.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about how when they lost Paul Pierce, that it looked like they were going to have to suffer through some adjustment periods with that, just because it was going to be hard to get that quality player, and then Jared Dudley falls into their lap. So it's more than a silver lining. I mean, I think he's a good player for them. I think they would rather have Paul Pierce, and then if they could get David West for the mid-level, that is a very nice move depending on how many years he wants, just in terms of a depth piece. They have other power forwards on roster, but I think David West, especially if Nene steps down again, you know, if he has another disconcerting start of a season, you have a guy in David West who's been a starter who can play a big role on that team.
Yeah, they need someone to take more long twos on that team. They don't have enough of that yet, so David West fit in perfectly there.
Hey, he'll be good with playoff Whitman, just not regular season Whitman.
Yeah, and the other reason I love Dudley, I mean, is he's sort of like a Paul Pierce light, even going down to like the body type. You know, maybe not quite as much one-on-one scoring, but about as good of a three-point shooter at this point as Pierce. You know, doesn't have the big shot resume, but maybe even a little bit better defensively as a small forward. And so, yeah, having that aspect now to the team is going to be real helpful for them going forward. A nice recovery for them, especially if they can get West. I think they would project to be, you know, about as good as they were last year, especially if they get a little more spacing by playing Dudley regularly at the spacing forward position.
As you brought up with the Bucks, I think that adding Jared Dudley solidifies, after it had just gotten destabilized, their spot in the playoffs. And so I think that what we're seeing is there's a deeper pool of teams, and obviously injuries can curtail all of this, but there's a deeper group of teams this year than last year that I think should be playoff teams.
Yeah, no, I think that's true, though. As much really changed at the top? Like, not really, but yeah, we got a little offseason to get into that next year, but it is kind of interesting. I don't think that, like, there haven't been any moves that have vaulted anyone into contender status who wasn't really already there before this free agency period. Even if the Spurs get Aldridge, they were going to be right there anyway, even before that.
Yeah, you want to get to Aldridge now?
Indeed. Some kind of ancillary things that I don't think are going to end up mattering, but he did meet with Miami, which is pretty amazing since they don't have any cap space at all. Bobby Marks put it out on Twitter that that's the ultimate sign of respect when you can get a free agent meeting when they basically have no way to get in this year, essentially. Like, you know, they just re-signed Dwayne Wade, which we'll get to, and, you know, they're going to be well into the tax, not to mention, you know, and they would have to do a sign and trade. They'd have to get under the apron and then be hard capped. They're, you know, well over the apron right now by over $10 million by my math, so it maybe even a little more than that. So hard to see how he goes there. Even like Chris Bosh, they could just trade Chris Bosh straight up for him because of the issues with, you know, the sign and trade and being hard capped. So yeah, I think what the speculation has been for people is that it's just simply Pat Riley saying, hey, take a 1-year deal and we'll talk next year when we have all this cap room. And then also there's this second meeting with the Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, so the Lakers decided after what was widely reported as a mistake of a first meeting to de-emphasize basketball when Kobe Bryant was there, they decided to have a meeting about basketball with Byron Scott there. So I chuckled a little bit at that, but I guess, to me, that's a show, that's a sign of respect, too. I mean, that they're willing to take another meeting. I can't recall that happening before.
Yeah, I don't make much of that. But other than the report that it took an hour into the first meeting before any basketball items were discussed at all, that's pretty remarkable when he's opting out of a situation in Portland where he could get the most money to go somewhere where he can win. It's just completely misgauging him. And especially if he's a really intelligent guy, Mark Spears reported that, you know, someone who's in some of these meetings said that he was asking the most intelligent basketball questions, basically of like anyone they'd ever met with in free agency. So the Lakers just, again, totally misjudging everything. And, you know, it's not like they have like some huge analytics department that was going to explain to them how this works. Now they had Mark Madsen, who's the coaching staff analytics guy, really, by most of the reporting, the only guy who's really doing that sort of stuff for the Lakers at this point in the second meeting. Hard to imagine that it makes much of a difference. And the reporting has indicated that still Spurs, Suns, and then maybe the Mavs as the leaders there. But I think the Mavs are much more focused in on DeAndre Jordan. So I'd say it seems to be down to Spurs, Suns, and hard to imagine that he would choose the Suns over the Spurs. That would be pretty remarkable.
Well, something I wanted to ask you is, like, to me, the downside with the Suns in some ways, what makes it hard is that their, it seems like their pitch is very similar to the Spurs, except that the Spurs pitch is better on all that. You know, they have better surrounding talent. They are in a state with where he has more of a personal connection. They have a Hall of Fame coach as opposed to a very good coach in Jeff Hornacek. I have trouble. I guess the medical staff is a nice thing, but I have trouble seeing.
Yeah, Spurs have a good staff too, but yeah.
The Spurs have a good staff too, but the Suns have that, you know, legendary, you know, people talk about that. Like, I get why the Suns got themselves in the conversation, but to me it's just one of those circumstances where I don't get it. I can get why it'd be nice in the room, but I don't get why that, why their sales pitch would beat the Spurs.
There is one thing that's kind of interesting, though, and this is a larger issue that comes up a lot, is it was reported that the Knicks basically Aldridge canceled his meeting with them when it became clear, and I'm sure he wouldn't have gone there anyway, but it became clear that they wanted him to play center, and he famously hates playing center. And so with that being the case, you know, they and I think actually, you know, especially as he ages, his mobility declines, he might be better at center. And certainly offensively, he's much better at center, right? He spaces the floor out way more, making a center go all the way out there and guard him. You know, I think most players, if you can play up, it's so much better for the offense. LeBron James, another example of this, right? Where if he plays power forward, now, like, you're just totally opening up the floor. Just the matchup problems are incredibly difficult unless you also go small. And then you're not going to have any protection at the basket against him. So, but the thing is, those guys hate guarding power players on the other end. And to me, I would think, hey, you know, like, isn't it better? You'll be able to take more advantage of this guy offensively than he can against you defensively. You're a great offensive player. Don't we want to make things easier for your offense? But, you know, I think players just hate guarding in the post. So, and that said, you know, in San Antonio, LaMarcus kind of like, yeah, I don't want to play center, blah, blah, blah. You know, that doesn't quite fit with the whole selfless, do whatever you can, San Antonio ethos. And, you know, especially with Tim Duncan, you know, Tim Duncan will play center next year. Be hilarious to see if he signs there, whether Tim Duncan is still, considered the power forward. They introduced LaMarcus as the center the way that they've done with, like, you know, Matt Bonner as the center and Tim Duncan as the power forward. Maybe this Tim Duncan as a power forward fiction will finally be over if LaMarcus signs there.
No, they'll announce Kawhi as the center.
Yeah, so both of them can be forwards.
Yeah. And Kawhi will be like, that's fine, I'll take it for All-Star. Yeah. I'll take it for All-Star consideration.
Yeah, but I mean, if any young players are listening to this, like, if you can be a small guy and hold up defensively at a bigger position, that gives you so many options offensively that it's really bad. I mean, look at someone Draymond like Draymond Green. Draymond Green is a perfect example, right? Like, if you could just make it up with toughness and then still play like a small guy on the other end, that's like the ticket to having an awesome offense for your team. And so the guys who can develop those skills and are willing to use them are very, very valuable. And so that's just something as a younger player maybe to remember that, you know, that can really help your team. It's a way to get on the floor.
And something I'd say with that also is that it makes your handle look a lot better too, because your handle, like, this is what I always thought about with Harrison Barnes when Kenneth Faried guarded him in 2013 in the playoffs against the Nuggets, was like, you look like a badass when you're guarding somebody who's not used to guarding somebody like that. And those kinds of things can make a guy look really good.
Yeah, another one would be Duke, for example. We've talked about this before, like Justice Winslow, Luol Deng, like guys like that. Like, Justice Winslow looked awesome because he played the four at Duke and was willing to be a man on the defensive end, and then he could do whatever he wanted offensively with these college fours trying to guard him. So it's kind of too bad that guys don't want to consider that, especially if they're big stars. And I get it. I mean, you know, being a post player defensively is like kind of miserable, but, you know, like, being awesome on offense, I think, is more fun than that. I guess we'll, you know, that's a bit of a digression there, but it is kind of interesting. You know, after Duncan leaves, then what? They got to get another center. They just traded away Splitter. You know, Diaw is on the downside. I mean, I guess they'll have to just bring someone in, but that could be like maybe something that would give LaMarcus pause. And he doesn't seem like quite Spursian enough. You know, quite that Spursian compared to some of the other guys they have as far as, like, that particular aspect.
Yeah. You want to move on to DJ?
Yeah, we should. Not much there other than...
Oh, actually, a little thing happened while we've been on the air.
Oh, what is it?
So DeAndre told the Knicks that they're out. So what that means
this,
is that
this
they're...
This just in.
This just in, but what that means is that the Robin Lopez deal can go through.
That's right. Yeah, that apparently was contingent on whatever small percentage chance that DJ was going to come there. But as we, I think everyone could have anticipated, that wasn't going to happen. So with that said, it's now down 50-50 between the Mavs and Clippers. Both are, you know, sort of holding their breath to see what happens. Decision's supposed to come in the next day or two or so. So it's not much else to report there. I mean, one thing that's kind of been floated around is that if he does go to Dallas, the idea of a three-way trade between Indiana with Ellis going to Indiana, which we'll get to, Hibbert then going to the Clippers, and then DJ going to the Mavs, might be something that everyone looks into. We'll see what happens. You know, if I'm the Mavs, I'm not sure I really want to help out the Clippers. They would have to give me like a pretty decent inducement to do that. Maybe take on someone like Raymond Felton or something like that. So
yeah, there'd have to be a real good reason for me, especially with the Mavs and Clippers, that if they made those kinds of deals, if they let the Clippers wither on the vine, they would probably jump them. And if they let Roy Hibbert go there, then it's a closer fight.
So Dwayne Wade returning to Miami. $20 million. He took maybe a $2 million discount off what the absolute maximum was that he could have made. He did get a $4 million raise this year, off of what his player option of $16 million would have been. So he's getting started back now towards being made whole for basically about that $10 million discount that he took when he re-signed after opting out to try and get LeBron back. Part of the reason why that was really possible, I think, for the Heat was the fact that Dragic did not start at the maximum. He started a little bit lower. I think you had it, at a little over $15 million, Danny?
About 15.6.
He's going to start at?
Yeah, about 15.6.
That five-year $90 million contract, which was about $19 million less over the course of the whole deal than Dragic could have gotten. So this is going to save Mickey Arison a lot of money. They're probably, as of right now, when you consider the repeater tax, which adds a dollar to each luxury tax bracket, they're probably looking at around $20 million in tax payment right now. But if they were to move on from Birdman, they could save maybe $10 million of that tax payment. And, Mario Chalmers as well makes about $4 million. Birdman makes about $5 million. So if they were able to do that, they could save. And really, Mickey Arison wouldn't be looking at too bad of a tax bill at all, and then, you know, they'll be able to get under the cap next year and the tax won't be an issue.
Yeah, when I was working on the piece for the Sporting News about Hassan Whiteside and their cap situation for 2016, I didn't write it in the piece, but what I kept on thinking as I was prepping the information was the end game was Wade signing a one-year deal, because it just maximizes their flexibility for whether it's Hassan Whiteside or if they really get into the Kevin Durant derby or something like that, because any additional constraints that they put would have made things a lot more complicated for next summer.
Yeah, and the big thing was getting Dragic to take less. And I think, you know, he did get a player option, I think, on his last year that's not really going to come into play, I don't think, anyway. And Dragic was willing to do, hey, what can I do to help re-sign Wade? And to be able to get Wade up, I think that's like rebuilt some trust now as well. They can give Wade the rest of that money back next year, if he re-signs for less. I mean, I would anticipate that he probably ends up signing for like $10 to $12 million on a three-year deal next year. And, you know, with his market value, it will probably be in the $10 million range or so by then. And so they'll give him a little bit over market value then, and he'll feel like ultimately that he was made whole. I'm sure he'll be just, you know, a part of the organization basically forever after that. So good job, good negotiating by the Heat to be able to get that discount out of Dragic and to fix the situation with a way that looked like it might be a little bit of a conundrum, and there was this idea that trust had broken down. So and they also saved money. So it was all Gordon Dragic really saved the Heat from this massive, massive repeater tax luxury payment, and, you know, they're able to give Wade kind of about what he was hoping for, I think.
So now to thank him, they can trade for Isaiah Thomas.
Oh, you mean because they were so happy together in Phoenix?
They were, yeah, best buddies.
All right, next one, let's get to Portland. Damian Lillard, as we talked about yesterday, is re-upped for the maximum. No word yet on what happened with the Rose Rule there, to see whether he's going to get between 25 to 30% of the salary cap if he makes an all-NBA team this next year. I would say if Portland is terrible, the odds of that are pretty low. No matter how good he is individually, they're just not going to get the attention. And for him to make third team All-NBA as a point guard, like he did in 2014, when they were like such a nice surprise, seems pretty low. I mean, the chances of them making the playoffs seem extremely low. So I think it's ultimately not going to matter that much, since making an All-NBA team, the point guard is going to be really hard. And then he doesn't have a player option. There was some talk that that might be the case. He does not have that. But he does have a 15% trade kicker. That's the sort of thing that we talked about. And that'll be important with the cap still continuing to rise. And also, as he gets later into that deal, he'll get to the point where he has more years of experience, so his max will rise. If he does get traded, that trade kicker could come in.
Yeah, it could. I mean, you don't expect him to get traded anytime in the near future, but, you know, towards the end of that deal, they could be in a different situation. And with Portland, I mean, I've for certain teams that are, let's say, more in the contender bracket that are going to have cap space, you can talk about how it might be good to wait because they have a much lower cap hold. If you wait, this is the same situation with the Warriors with Harrison Barnes. If they wait, presumably he's going to get more than his cap hold. The best example of that is the Wizards with Bradley Beal. But Damian Lillard is such an important part of their identity, and especially if it looks like they're losing LaMarcus Aldridge, that I feel like it's worth it because it's not like they were going to – I don't think they were going to gun for Kevin Durant or something next year. So for them, take the money exactly the same as with Anthony Davis. You do it now, you run, and you're happy.
Yeah, they'll have plenty of space next year anyway, you know, if someone really, really wants to go there. But then the other signing they had, another one that I think is a decent value, Ed Davis, 3 years, $20 million with them. And I like to fit there because when you look at a floor spacing five, Myers Leonard, we talked about this with Aminu too, potentially playing some four, though it's looking like with the Davis signing, he'll be more used on the wing as a defender. But Davis is great at playing pick and roll, great offensive rebounder, great at finishing dump offs from the dunker position down on the baseline. But, you know, just isn't really a center defensively with the amount of heft that he has. He's basically a center offensively. So now with Leonard to kind of guard the beefier guys, Davis can guard out on the floor defensively, and then they can kind of switch roles offensively, and Davis can play pick and roll while Leonard spaces the floor. So that's a good fit. 26 years old, also someone who could potentially be tradable for some assets as the cap goes up and his contract starts to look better. These are the sorts of guys who, when you're in Portland's position, you get guys who are 26, Aminu, 24, undervalued guys. You strike quickly on them. Exactly the sort of guys that Sacramento should be going for instead of, you know, 28, 29-year-old, 30-year-olds, the way they are. Someone who can plausibly improve when your team actually gets good, or would be a good enough contract that if they improve, they could get flipped for more.
Yeah, it's a great value thing. The only disappointment I have with it is just that I was excited to see Aminu play more power forward, and now with Noah Vonleh and Ed Davis, we're probably not going to see much of that in the standard alignments. I mean, obviously you can see things change with injuries and everything over the course of the year, but Davis fits that mold better in some ways than Aminu did. And so, yeah, it's exactly what you said. It's a good signing. It's when teams are in a, you know, not in a peak city in terms of player interest. And I'm not saying anything negative about Portland. I'm just saying, you know, it's not LA in that sense. You want to use your space in a way to cultivate value using it. It's the same thing actually that I would argue for Utah. You know, I'm not saying Ed Davis in particular would have been a great fit there, but you get a guy now and that gives you surplus value later on. Cause you can, I think Ed Davis in his third year, that'll be a nice little contract.
Yeah, no, that could well be the case. Also notable, you told me this, that Portland didn't really make an offer to Wes Matthews, which
right.
Makes sense. That would also kind of fit with the idea that Aldridge is, you know, told them that he essentially was not coming back. Although, you know, I guess Damian Lillard, like, flew down there to meet with him and try and convince him to. It doesn't look like that really is going to meet with much success here. And, you know, Olshay had to deny that. He doesn't want to get blamed for this, the fact that Aldridge went back, you know, that the fans can't say like, oh, like you gave up on Aldridge, blah, blah. That's why he left. You know, if there's still a slim glimmer of hope, he has to play that out. You know, but he doesn't want to get blamed for that. But realistically, it seems like they are operating as if they've known that he was going to be gone alone, and they're doing a nice job of it so far, I would say.
Yeah, they are, and I think we can move from the Portland Trailblazers to a former Portland Trailblazer and Thomas Robinson.
Yeah, man, how many teams has that guy played for?
I think this is six.
Pretty remarkable for a guy who was the number five pick in the 2012 draft a mere 3 years ago. But I like, so the Nets did a couple of deals. One was Shane Larkin moving from the Knicks to the Nets. He was actually had his rookie option declined shortly after being acquired by the Knicks. So he was a free agent despite being a first round draft pick, you know, only 2 years ago. Still pretty young. T-Rob also still pretty young, gives them some needed athleticism, some offensive rebounding off the bench. $2.2 million for T-Rob with a second-year player option. And then Larkin was pretty small. I think what looks like what they did there was they split up the taxpayer MLE between those guys. And I like that. I like that they moved quickly on those guys, you know, who normally would have been way down the totem pole and, you know, might have been actually ended up getting more as teams with cap space realized that, you know, there wasn't much else out there. And with the Nets really having nothing in the way of draft assets, young guys who could still conceivably improve, probably won't, but still could. Those are the type of guys you want to bring in, and both those guys are pretty good athletes, and they needed a lot of athleticism with guys like D-Will and Joe Johnson kind of being, and Brook Lopez kind of being slow, like more plodding guys.
Yeah, and I mean, other than I think they still have a need at center, they fill two niches that are important for this team. They re-upped Thaddeus Young, but they didn't really have that true backup four. And then the point guard position, they have Jarrett Jack. I have had the theory for a while now that I feel like Jarrett Jack is a very logical fit for the Brendan Haywood contract, if that was something that worked for both sides. I don't love Shane Larkin as a second point guard, but as a third one, he's a nice little fit. They got him for a good price.
Yeah, and I mean, if with Larkin, Rondé, with T-Rob, at least you can have some more exciting athletic players for the Nets who maybe on the second unit could, you know, inject a little bit of life into the Barclays Center, although, you know, that's certainly easier said than done. Too much about the Nets here. These are not enormous moves in the grand scheme of things, but I just wanted to say that I kind of liked what they did with their limited resources. The Pacers, Monte Ellis took four for $24 million. The Pacers basically have used up all of their existing cap space player option after the third year for Ellis, and he turned down the Kings, who supposedly offered for free.
It is a great situation for Monte Ellis because he gets to play next to a guy in George Hill who is a very good defender who can bounce between both positions. And Paul George, I mean, I think it could grow into a greater offensive role. So Monte can just kind of go crazy on offense. They need that. And then you can hide him on defense, especially if they keep Roy Hibbert for this year, just because then you have somebody to clean up the messes. I like that. I like that fit. And for the Pacers, I mean, he gives them something that they need. I'm not the biggest Monte Ellis fan just in terms of his strengths versus his weaknesses, but his strengths will be way well used and well appreciated there.
I like the fit in some ways, as you said. I don't like the contract. He's 29, a guy who is, for whatever efficiency he's going to provide, is dependent on getting to the rim, not an efficient three-point shooter. I think at this age now, it's pretty fair to say he's never going to get there. It's been starting to take a lot more long twos, and that's even when he was playing pick and roll with Dirk Nowitzki and Tyson Chandler. Now he's going to be playing pick and roll with, I don't know, nobody. I mean, who's there for now? You know, and if they used up all their space, there's really nobody on the roster who's going to play for me. Is it really going to be Paul George? You know, I don't think they want to play that way all the time with him at the four. And then Hibbert, if he sticks around, he's, you know, one of the worst pick and roll centers in basketball. So I do fear that this is just going to lead to him jacking a lot of long twos. And, you know, I don't think he's going to be able to get to the basket much without much spacing. And the fact that just his quickness overall has declined. And then you've got another 4 years of this, basically, I think it's unlikely he exercised that player option, although he still was able to extract it. It seems pretty clear what happened was, you know, they probably were talking about, I would guess, something more like a 3-year, $27 million deal. And then the Kings came in with that portable 48, and they had to just up their offer. I think I might rather have had a re-signed Rodney Stuckey, maybe in the $5 to $6 million range, and then, you know, trying to get another rotation guy, someone who can play a little power forward. You know, I mean, what about, like, what if they had just gone after, like, Ed Davis instead? You know, Davis and Stuckey, I think that's, like, you know, not that Ed Davis wanted to play there, but he probably could have started for them. You know, that's, like, that's a pretty decent inducement to go there. Those two guys, you know, would have been better than using this all on Ellis. We'll see, though, maybe if they are able to move Hibbert, or even if they stretch Hibbert, then there might be some more moves left still. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be really weird to see who ends up playing for the four for this team, because they don't really have anyone who's even remotely starting quality at the four on the roster.
Yeah, that's definitely an issue. You want a Twitter update since you're not online?
Desperately.
Mark Stein, Tim McMahon, and somebody else are reporting that DeAndre Jordan is leaning heavily, but has not made his decision, leaning heavily towards the Dallas Mavericks.
Wow. Well, so maybe that's what's going to happen now. Maybe that that three-way trade getting Hibbert to the Clippers could happen. And then, you know, now that maybe makes the Ellis move look a little bit better, at least in the short term. But, yeah, I mean, the Pacers is probably not the biggest issue there. That's crazy if that really happens, that you have to imagine that, you know, a lot of the interpersonal dynamics really would have had to have been what went into this, right? Like, you know, DJ, the Mavericks seem to have sold him on becoming an all-star center, becoming a larger part of the offense, running, being the main guy, running the pick and rolls, as we talked about. And I think, you know, both with his kind of desire for a little more self-actualization to really see what he can become as a higher option, you know, I think just that he is someone who seems a little bit more sensitive than some other people about what his standing is around the league and where he's kind of viewed in the hierarchy with all the all defense, you know, publicization that Doc has been doing for him. And then his statement that he didn't want to be in the dunk contest, unless he was also in the actual All-Star game itself. Give you some idea that maybe that's what it is. He just wants to play a larger role that was never going to happen for him in LA. It's not done yet, but yeah, God, what a disaster that would be for the Clippers, huh?
If they can't get
Hibbert back.
Yeah, do you think that they would be a realistic title contender if you swap DeAndre for Hibbert?
Oh man, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves here.
But let's say conceptually, it's fun to free flow this.
You know, I mean, Hibbert supposedly slipped a little bit defensively. He also was dealing with some lower body injuries throughout most of the year. They didn't have Paul George last year, but they still were a pretty quality defense. And, you know, I think he's a big part of that. He would provide a totally different element for the Clippers. You know, he's really a pretty bad offensive player, you know, for those limitations that we talked about. I mean, he's basically, you know, inefficient post-up, shoot a 15-footer and, you know, maybe get some offensive boards. Just his limited explosion is just such a limitation when he's playing pick and roll or trying to do actually all those things that DeAndre did so well for them offensively. But, I mean, I think their defense could conceivably improve by quite a bit if he's out there and he can be the player that he was in 2014 when, for the first half of the year, the Pacers had a historically good defense. Hibbert's only 28, you know, he shouldn't be declining that much. He's, you know, having just that wall at the basket. I think that he can be better than DeAndre defensively still, who is a little overrated in that respect. And it's not inconceivable that the Clippers, with that improved defense, could be better than last year. You know, especially if Lance improves as well. But, you know, Hibbert is not as good a player as DeAndre Jordan, so... You know, the offense will take a major step back if they get him, but, you know, maybe the defense could improve enough to make up for it. I'm not sure, but probably not.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much on the same page there, but, I mean, the other component of this is if I'm Dallas, it's going to take so much of an incentive for me to throw them a lifeline if they get DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah.
Because you have the chance to just put a stake through the heart of a legitimate contender for your spot. And it would take so much for me to do that.
Yeah, and the Clippers don't really have the salary now to get Hibbert on their own unless they were to just wing and use Stevenson. Stevenson cannot be aggregated in a trade since they received him for, you know, I forget how long it is. I think it's 3 months. So, I mean, they could do a deal with Indiana. I don't think that Indiana would really want Stevenson back at this point. You know, and there's not really any way for the Clippers to give much salary relief to Indiana, which would be the whole point of Hibbert. Like, why, if you really want to do that, why just stretch him and open up $10 million this year and spread the $15 million over the next 3 years? So, yeah, I mean, is taking on Raymond Felton's salary enough? You know, I mean, Dallas is desperately going to need some more space now. You know, they basically, you know, they've got Devin Harris at point guard. That's about it, you know, because they also agreed now with Wesley Matthews, who agreed to a 4-year deal worth between $13 and $15 million per season, depending on whether DeAndre comes. It'll be higher if he does not come, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that sounds about right, and that's a nice top four. It's not the greatest top four, but I think...
Well, if Wes Matthews is what Wes Matthews again, I mean, that's a hell of a gamble on a guy coming off an Achilles injury, and the only indication you have that he's going to be okay is an Instagram video posted of him, like, limping around and shooting, like, set shot 15-footers at this point, which was... That Instagram video is, like, one of the all-time, like, great marketing... things. I mean, Wes Matthews isn't, I mean, he probably would have got just straight up maxed out if he were healthy, but it's going to cost him maybe like, you know, $8 million tearing his Achilles. That's incredible.
And it sabotaged that Portland team. I mean, you think about,
oh gosh, yeah.
You think about how that injury affected, if he, assuming, you know, that he goes to Dallas, how that affects the entire power balance of the Western Conference, because Portland, I would say, very likely stays together. If they do that, I think they might have even had a shot at making the Western Conference Finals.
Well, no, maybe if they'd gotten out of the Warriors bracket, they could have. And don't forget, they had all those other injuries that happened too that killed them.
Oh yeah, I mean, their whole team got sabotaged.
Yeah, so I agree with you that, you know, probably wouldn't have been that huge of a difference ultimately, but as far as getting the Western Conference Finals, but yeah, I do agree with you that it's huge. I mean, because, you know, DeAndre Jordan, is he heavily considering going to Dallas without Wes Matthews also having signed there? I mean, it seems like that might have been what kind of put him over the top, that they have someone else. And, you know, maybe that, I think players probably are more optimistic about fellow players returning than we are necessarily, because that's just the mentality that you have to have, and about yourself and your fellow players, just that optimism. So I don't know if Wes is going to be the player that he was. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be Parsons also coming off a major injury, by the way. You know, was he even going to be ready fully for training camp? You know, with this sort of shadowy knee surgery that he had. They have DeAndre Dirk, you know, only can play probably 28 minutes a game now, bit statuesque defensively. And they basically just have those four guys and Devin Harris. And, you know, that's really about it on that team, right? So, I don't think they're even necessarily going to be that good unless they can really unearth some gems at point guard. But at least DeAndre now would give them a little bit of a bridge to the future when they'll have a ton of cap space again next year. They'll still have Dirk on for cheap. So this might still be a transition year, but there's some hope now at least that they could land a super big star and then sort of continue the contention with that guy and DJ and maybe Parsons and Matthews as kind of your core as Dirk rides off into the sunset. But we are getting ahead of ourselves. That's not finalized yet. Another interesting thing, another guy who used the Sacramento Kings as leverage, turning down a 4-year, $64 million offer reported.
Yeah, it's great that Sacramento cleared that cap space.
Well, another thing that was so ridiculous about it, and Zach Lowe pointed this out in his column, and it was something that I had thought about also, you know, when thinking about maybe the Kings might try and open up some space, what I thought they were going to do is stretch those guys. But the beauty of stretching them is, A, it doesn't cost any assets. B, you can actually wait and get a commitment because you can just stretch someone whenever you want. Anytime up until September 1st, it still works to distribute the salary over the maximum number of years. So now, though, they opened up all this space And guess what? Like, not really that much out there, and they have to spend it on someone. So, and it looks like that someone, at least to a certain extent, is Marco Bellinelli, who agreed to a 3-year deal, $19 million, a little bit more than the mid-level. Maybe that's what some other people were offering. And someone who is a real good shooter for them, that helps. They really needed someone who could shoot the ball. But he's also 29 years old. You know, you could look at him as comparable to Jody Meeks, who got 3 years, $18 million last year, but Meeks was 26 at that point and probably a little better shooter than Marco is as far as having like a quicker release. And you know, maybe even a little bit better defender than Marco at this point in his career. And then you consider that he's 3 years younger as well. So,
Meeks also went to a team that had a desperate need for a shooting guard
I would say the Kings do too.
Well, yeah, the Kings do too. I mean, but Macklemore, I mean, depending, I don't think you can play Macklemore and Bellinelli together for extended stretches.
Oh, I think you could against bench units. Not against like starters. I mean, neither of those guys can really guard a real good small forward particularly well. But you know, they've got Rudy Gay still. This would also maybe enable them if they can get one more guy on the wing with some size, or even if they bring back Omri Caspi as well to play small with Gay at the four, you know, which I think they might do if they have Willie Cauley-Stein as the backup center. That, you know, that's another unit that could be pretty good. You could maybe even just like switch everything if you've got Gay at the four and Cauley-Stein at the five. So, you know, not a terrible signing. I mean, a little more than I'd want to go for Bellinelli, especially, you know, when he's going to be 31, 32. He's one of those guys just like Meeks where, you know, you remember the Pistons were terrible and then Meeks came back and all of a sudden they were looking pretty good again. Just having that one shooter when you don't have any can really open things up for you in a huge way. So I think he could make a huge difference for them, but just out of a pure value standpoint, this is an overpay.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with all that. Quick DeAndre update. Our friend Mark Spears is reporting that I'll read his quote. I'll read his tweet verbatim. Clippers free agent center DeAndre Jordan plans to announce that he will be signing with the Mavericks early this evening, a source told Yahoo.
All right. Well, plans to announce is still not exactly.
It's
not
a little
exactly. But all right. But I mean, I think it's probably getting to the point where, I can't remember the last time that something went this far down a road in terms of reporting of someone, a big free agent being with the team, and then that he went back on it. So.
Yeah,
wow, what a disaster for the Clippers, man.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of reporting, that ties us into Tristan Thompson, which is now one of the more compelling stories of this part because we all thought that the deal was done. It from my, what I remember, that was the reporting, and now it is not done.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are still feeling like he's going to end up back there, but maybe they just realized with the way the market was, they had a little more leverage than they thought. It was reported as 5 for $80, and I can't recall if there are any options on that or not. I don't think there were. So maybe that's the sticking point now is getting another option with Thompson being 24. That option is real nice to get back on the market at 28 instead of 29. But the irony is that supposedly Draymond Green, when he agreed to 5 for $82, that was based on this Thompson deal that in fact now wasn't even done. So that would kind of be too bad for Green if Thompson ends up getting more than him, because Green's obviously a million times better than Thompson.
Well, I actually think it might go the other way. I think it might have helped Green's leverage and that Thompson might get less than him.
The only thing that's going to happen is it's going to be more.
Okay, interesting.
You think there's no way it's going to be less than that.
Considering the personal relationship and the risk, the Rich Paul of it all,
yeah,
you're probably right.
Thompson has all the leverage.
True.
And especially if they're not willing to give him that player option, if I had to guess, and you know, I don't know this inside, that's what I think the sticking point is now, because, you know, Thompson could go out on the market theoretically, still get a max deal. But on the other hand, now those sources are kind of drying up as well. You know, who's going to offer, Tristan Thompson a maximum deal on the market at this point?
The Kings.
Yeah, I mean, but the Kings, I think, you know, they're looking to sign Rondo. I mean, the Kings also have, you know, plenty of power players already.
Yeah, they do.
So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe Phoenix could be an option if they strike out on Aldridge, but they would have to clear even more space to do an offer sheet. So, yeah, I don't know. Thompson may not have quite as much leverage, but
ultimately he also has more in the sense that they can't replace him, and in the sense that LeBron will be angered if they don't come to an agreement with him. So
right.
Yeah. So what else we got here?
We should do the Knicks. The Knicks. Robin Lopez. Now that DeAndre is not going there, 4 years, $54 million, and Aaron Aflalo, 2 years, $16 million, second year player option.
What do you think of those?
I like Robin. I think that's a little bit on the high end, but it's a recalibration thing. I think in the later years of that contract, he'll be fine. That said, I've been very open about discomfort for the major free agent destinations putting out long-term money. So the big question with him is, will they be able to trade him next summer if they need to clear that space? And I think they could.
Yeah, there's going to be so much space open next year that I think it should be easy to move guys who are on relative value contracts. And Lopez is 27, so you're getting him right into his prime years. He's developing a pretty decent little jump shot with a quick release, decent jump hook, someone you could throw the ball to in the triangle who, if you're not guarding him, could score a little bit on a jump hook, not a terrible passer, plays hard, hits the offensive glass. I mean, it's about right for him, I think, especially, if it were to decline a little bit, which maybe it will. I don't know about that. And then Aflalo, I put in my notes just a joke that he's the perfect triangle player because he takes a crap load of long twos, but considering the short-term nature of the deal, 2 for $16 million with the second year player option, about right for him. If they'd gotten longer, I would have maybe wanted to get a little less, but he's going to start for them at the two now.
Yeah, he starts. He can, the hard thing with Aaron is just where is his actual game right now? I mean, his defense has fallen off the last couple of years.
A concern. Where is someone's game?
Yeah,
it needs to improve.
Needs to improve. Like because there's this whole thing with him that he was one of that early group of 3-and-D young guys, and over the last couple of years he hasn't really been that. And so you don't generally think that a guy's going to get that back. But and if he doesn't, if he's neither 3 nor D, then that's a big problem for the Knicks.
Yeah, and my snark about the triangle. I think Aflalo, if he played differently, could be a really good player. If he really just concentrated on shooting threes, he's been, high 30s, 3-point shooter throughout his career. And his defense, he looks like he would be a good defender. He's pretty strong, relatively quick feet, but the metrics have not particularly shown that he is a good defender. And so, maybe he'll improve that now if he's playing a little bit more of a role alongside Carmelo. They'll be reunited from their Denver days. But it's okay. I think really the idea, and Bobby Marks has been tweeting about this, and I agree with him, is look, they don't have any NBA players. You got to get some NBA players in there, start to look a little bit better. Maybe if they make the playoffs this year, I don't know that they necessarily will with these guys, but if Carmelo comes back strong, maybe that's a possibility. They fill out the rest of the roster. They've got about $8 million or so in space left now at this point. Maybe you get a little bit more into contention, and then when you got another $30 million in space next year, you can add someone else. You start to look a little bit better. Maybe you can even add two guys if you can move some of the money that you took on this year. So, you gotta crawl before you can walk. I think that's kind of what this is for the Knicks, because they weren't going to get any of the good guys. They tried on all of them and didn't quite work out.
Yeah, and I think that the reaction with Robin is good, useful for them in a way that the Lakers would appreciate as well. That you can get somebody who's on a reasonable contract who helps you get better in the short term, especially considering the Knicks don't have their own pick. And that's a huge component of this for them as well, is that they have no incentive to be bad. So they might as well do that. It helps their stock with players. They lose nothing in terms of draft assets. And then, if they need to jettison a guy like Robin Lopez, there will be a line of suitors down the block.
The Pistons did not particularly enjoy one of their moves, which was Aaron Baines' 3-year deal, basically mid-level money, $17 million, third-year player option. He, I think, is either 27 or 28 now. The idea is for him to play backup center. I don't really think he's any good, though, frankly, but... again, they needed a backup center. I'm not really sure who else was on the market now. I might have preferred someone like Alexis Ajinsa, who would have a little clearer path to playing time, and maybe they could offer him a little bit more. He's about the same age. I definitely prefer him over Baines. I mean, Baines doesn't really have any shooting range, not a shot blocker, just sort of a big, tough guy, you know, can do some, like, jump hooks around the basket every now and again, set some good screens, not like an explosive pick-and-roll finisher, but, you know, kind of just a guy, you know. I mean, he was on a minimum contract last year for a reason, and he was totally overmatched in the playoffs. I think they could have waited and either got someone with a little more upside. I mean, if they offered this same contract to Bismack Biyombo, you think he would have taken it? Like, I think that would have been a much better deal to get Biyombo, again, someone with a younger, with a little more upside, because you start to wonder, you know, what exactly is the plan now in Detroit? I mean, I think they're going to be better next year, but, you know, I mean, this is kind of their team now. You got to just kind of hope that Drummond really improves a ton, that Stanley Johnson is a real player. And, you know, maybe they'll be in that lower, you know, eight seed kind of mix, but I don't see them really above that level.
Yeah, this was the first contract that I would really classify as bad. I think that it just didn't.
Yeah, make I it thought to... it was the worst one yesterday.
Yeah,
maybe Ellis would be the other one that would.
Yeah, I think Ellis had an internal there was a justification for that. But then we should talk about the other move that they made, which depending on what happens with everything, could be really kind of amazing for a couple reasons, and that's that Phoenix offloaded a series of players. They offloaded Marcus Morris, Danny Granger, and Reggie Bullock, I believe, to the Pistons for an eventual second-round pick. I think it's, like, really deep second-round pick. And those guys, you know, they add useful pieces to the Pistons. I mean, they're a team that needed depth, and we talked about how, you know, using space, I think they maybe could have used the space a little bit better. Like, there's some things they could have done, but there's that dynamic, and also the interpersonal component that Phoenix willingly split up the Morris twins.
Yeah, let's look at this from the Detroit standpoint first. I mean, basically a dump, $8.4 million combined in salary for those three guys. Danny Granger is pretty much done. He signed that BAE contract with the Heat, and, you know, it just basically was salary dumped in the Dragic trade. So, you know, he's kind of dead money there. Reggie Bullock, drafted by the Clippers, they desperately needed him to play for a year and a half. Apparently was deemed to not be ready. And, you know, as kind of a 3-and-D guy, might still have some potential. But, you know, the fact that he was I think he was drafted as a junior and hasn't really done much yet. You know, still a decent, you know, they need some more wings. Maybe he can play a little bit. I got to be honest, I didn't see him do that much with Phoenix. I didn't watch that many of their games down the stretch. So, don't have a great idea of where he's at, but, you know, another nice maybe lottery ticket to someone who could become something. And then Marcus Morris, I like more as a small ball four off the bench. You know, he can compete with Ilyasova, Anthony Tolliver, you know, but a guy who's, you know, has really been or almost 40% from three, and another guy who, like, next to Drummond, it might work pretty well, you know, where he might not hold up as a power forward, but, you know, can space the floor, a little better shooter at this point than Tolliver or Ilyasova. So, and even can swing down to the three and at least can shoot offensively. So not a bad player on a cheap contract, only $4.5 million. The first thing I would look at from this, the last thing from Detroit's perspective is, what's the opportunity cost here? You know, I think they got some decent contracts back. You know, they got Baines. Would you have rather waited to sign Tobias Harris to a max offer sheet? I think he's a really good fit next to Drummond, but, you know, with how quickly things have gone here, you can't even sign that offer sheet until after the moratorium. You wait three more days, and then Orlando, if they match, now you've got nothing. You've basically got all this cap space and nothing to do with it. You know, everyone's going to pretty much be gone by that time, especially with the moratorium being so long this year. It's tough to say. I mean, there's definitely a big opportunity cost in terms of not being able to get Harris, but in this environment, you have to imagine, I think, that Orlando would probably just match and just figure it out later as far as all those power forwards, because just rather than letting them go for nothing, what else are they going to use their cap space on? And so, you know, is a 25% chance at Tobias Harris worth, you know, not being able to use the rest of this cap space, basically having no backup center, not a ton of depth? I don't know. Tough call. I mean, I'm kind of more of a shoot for the moon guy, but I completely understand why they did this, and it may well turn out that this is one of the best things. And now, with perhaps the most logical option for Tobias Harris gone, those negotiations are about to get real interesting with Orlando. I might expect those to drag on for a long time without him necessarily getting an offer sheet. Portland might be another place that he would go once they lose LaMarcus's cap hold officially.
Yeah, they could definitely be an option. I would not expect the Lakers to really get in with him just because we talked about the idea of their long-term money. But yeah, I mean, we're at the point now where they've seen what the writing on the wall is in terms of contracts. If you're Orlando, I think that you should match it just because you can get value eventually. You know, he's not Tobias Harris is most distinctly not my favorite player, but he certainly has talent. And if you're not going to do anything else with it, it's not like it's going to push them into the luxury tax or anything. So you get him and you think about moving him for a long time. Also, I think he makes them better in the short term. I think Orlando is at the point now where that isn't a downside for them. You know, they can win some more games. They can use him with everybody else, but you just make him a lower priority and then you eventually think about moving him.
Yeah, this is just something to think about. I don't want to get into this, but let's make a note. If you're Philly, would you make an offer to Tobias Harris? That's something to think about. Maybe I think we're going to have time to talk about that later, because I expect that he might drag out a little bit longer, but you know, we'll see. So yeah, how about from the Phoenix side now? Looking at them, they clear $8.4 million in space, and they also, from an interpersonal standpoint, they broke up Markieff Morris and Marcus Morris. There's a couple of ways to look at this. Number one, they got these assault charges. Did you ever have a chance to look up exactly what that was? I don't remember exactly. Yeah, yeah. What was the story with they were both accused of assaulting someone, right?
Correct. So there was a gentleman who had been involved with them previously, like in high school. He claims he was like a mentor figure for them. And they had some sort of falling out years ago. And the story is, the claim story, obviously this is all allegations, they pled not guilty so far, but it hasn't gone to anything yet, is that they were at a event that they had something involved with at a high school game or kind of high school equivalent, it might have been AAU, something like that, and this gentleman was there too, and some third party who knew the Morris twins informed them of that he kind of interpreted this text conversation with their mother as being something. And so then apparently this gentleman was assaulted by up to five people, and he claims that two of those five were the Morris twins. And so they were charged with felony aggravated assault.
Yeah, like they beat him up pretty good, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. He was knocked unconscious. He had a it was bad. Like, I mean, it wasn't. I mean, if you get felony aggravated assault, it's generally pretty rough. I mean, he knocked unconscious, and there was something else. He had a fractured nose. I mean, it's not good. And laceration.
Yeah, yeah. This isn't just like, you know, hey, I'm gonna get into a fight in the parking lot. Like, this is like, you know, so not great. And so that, I think that is, when you consider that issue, like, I really like Markieff Morris as a player. I talked about that on yesterday's show. I think that he actually is really good. And you'll recall that when they were up for extensions, the Morris twins, Phoenix basically said, here's $12 million or $13 million split it between the two of you guys. And they both ended up really getting below market deals, especially Markieff, who I think, you know, if you were a free agent in this market, I would have maxed him out probably, you know, not counting, like, you know, this character incident. But so I think now that they had this allegation hanging over them, this idea that, hey, you guys are much better together, well, if you're teaming up to potentially, you know, assault people, then maybe you're not much better together. It kind of takes away that argument. They might feel aggrieved that, you know, they were sold a bill of goods, that they would kind of get to stay together, you know, and that's why they took such big discounts. But that's that. I mean, you know, when you do something like that, I guess that kind of like changes the playing field a little bit. But let's get now to the basketball implications of that. Phoenix now has that $8.4 million in space. You know, you might say, all right, now they're on their way to getting LaMarcus, but, you know, they still got another $10 million in space to go on the team. And it actually, in some ways, might make acquiring him more difficult, because if they had acquired him by a sign and trade, and they have the assets to convince Portland to do that, then they only would have really had to have about $14 million in salary to send back. And they could have done it with those three contracts. And then if they had PJ Tucker, who's another $5 million, that gets you up pretty close there. And you could throw in, you know, some of their other assets, someone like Devin Booker, TJ Warren, those like that. Warren would be the guy I'd ask for if they're Portland. They have plenty of future picks also they could provide as an inducement. And so if you remember the way the trade rules work, for between $9.8 million to $19.6 million in outgoing salary, you can get that plus $5 million. So if LaMarcus started at 19, all they have to do is send out 14 in the sign and trade to get him back. If they sign him outright with cap space, then you've got to dump $19 million in salary instead. So that gets a lot more difficult. You know, they can kind of dump those guys, but they would have to dump someone who is pretty good that they liked as an asset anyway to get to the $19 million. So, yeah, I might have wanted to hold on to those guys, especially if, especially with Morris and with even with Bullock being kind of more value contract, just see whether you get Aldridge, and then you can always dump them later because they have so many assets, or do the sign and trade with Portland. You know, I don't know what the conversations are. There might be, it might become clear why they did this later, but it's, it's not necessarily what makes a ton of sense on the surface.
Yeah, kind of parallels the Jared Dudley thing, where there might be something else that is in the offing that we haven't heard yet, but without it, it seems a little bit weird.
Also, here's another thing. Tim Duncan now officially coming back per veteran reporter out of San Antonio, Mike Monroe. Not a huge surprise considering he was in the recruiting meetings. he's basically considered like fait accompli. Manu Ginobili said that he was going to report his decision in an Argentinian paper in a little bit. So we'll see what happens. Maybe it depends what happens with Aldridge first as to whether he's going to come back or not. But I think all signs point to him getting the room exception for them if he does come back, and then Duncan and Aldridge splitting about $26 million, as we discussed yesterday, if in fact Aldridge does go there. Let me ask you this. Where does San Antonio go if Aldridge does not sign there?
I honestly have no idea. My first thought for a long time was Greg Monroe. I don't know why I thought that, because he doesn't totally fit that, but there isn't really a lot out there that you see as a completely logical fit. And so, yeah, I'm really not sure. I mean, you could see them maybe they'd have to be very quick on the trade market, if they wanted to use that to pick up space. And I don't see a guy like Tobias Harris. I mean, you're really thinking about it. It's a very, very slim pickings out there right now for what they want.
Yeah, I mean, Tobias Harris could be one. We'll get down to the list of guys who are still left in a second here. Why don't we just do that now of who's left? You've got starter quality bigs. You've got like Enes Kanter, maybe if you consider him a starter, his defensive starter quality, his offense is, and David West. That's basically all you've got. West has been linked with San Antonio. I think if Aldridge goes there, he would be signing there basically as a fourth big at the minimum, frankly, or maybe they give him the room exception and Manu gets the minimum or doesn't come back. Then as far as bigs and more of a non-starter, Kosta Koufos, lower end starting big, rebound, protect the rim a little bit. Not really that great of a finisher on the pick and roll. He's kind of more just like goes up soft with like floaters around the rim. So, someone who probably will kill the offense, a center who you can easily just go small against, and he's not really going to hurt you. The Warriors did that against him in the playoffs, does some things, not a terrible option. Bismack Biyombo, Mirza Teletovic, Jordan Hill, Brandon Bass, Mari Stoudemire, Derek Williams, Big Baby. Those are basically like, that's what's left for you in your big market now.
Then on the wing. You mean Clipper starting center, Big Baby?
Yeah. So then on the wing, Tobias Harris would be obviously number one. He's restricted. Then you're going down to Lou Williams, Rodney Stuckey, J.R. Smith. K.J. McDaniel starts to make sense around that area as just someone who could maybe improve, although their teams are limited to offering him the MLE since he's to start with at least, because he is a restricted free agent with 1 to 2 years of experience.
Gerald Green, another guy, maybe, you know, sort of heat up off the bench type of guy. And then in the point guard market, Beverly and Reggie Jackson are restricted. And then you're getting down, there's always slim pickings on the point guard market. You're getting down to Rondo, Jeremy Lin, Jameer Nelson, CJ Watson, Mo Williams. You know, Reggie Jackson could be somewhere that the Kings might go, if they, I would much rather, because Rondo, he's always going to be out there, right? Where is he going to go if you really even want him? You know, they're talking, they met with him apparently, but why not just take a flyer on the offer sheet for Reggie Jackson and, you know, have him be your starting point guard. And then if that, you know, the Pistons don't match it, Rondo will still be there, I would imagine, or, you know, losing out on him. I'd much rather have Jackson than Rondo. So, you know, maybe that's where they could go with their space, but really, you know, them being used as leverage by all the sort of like guys that didn't make sense because they were too old for them to begin with is just adding insult to injury with that, that miserable trade that they made.
Yeah. Adding insult to injury. But yeah, I think that the proactivity, I mean, the patience that required to do a Reggie Jackson situation, because obviously you have to wait until after the moratorium and do that, is so anti everything that they've done so far that it's one of those things, if they were going to make smart moves, they wouldn't have done what led to this.
Yeah, no, I guess that's true. So now, why don't we run down, that's all the moves, right? Did I miss anything?
Gary Neal to the Wizards for the biannual exception was announced during this. And then the other thing that just happened while we've been talking is DeAndre's done. It's Spears is reporting it, other people are reporting it. Sam.
Wow. Wow. That's what a coup for Dallas. That team just has, like, you know, 9 lives, don't they? I mean, how many iterations have they had since they won the championship in, you know, around Dirk? I mean, they've had probably 10 different teams around Dirk, basically, you know, since, like, you know, 2004. I mean, Nash left. They brought in Jason Terry. You know, then they traded for Kidd. They got Tyson Chandler. They won the championship. Now they've sort of still been around the fringes. So, yeah, I mean, good for the Mavs. And now Jordan at least provides them a little bit of a bridge to the future. They at least now, you know, won't be that draft pick that they gave away to Boston in the Rondo trade doesn't look too terrible. Great job by Dallas. And, gosh, what a disaster for the Clippers, since Doc Rivers took over as GM, right?
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, this is a team that is now, while we talked about, you know, the possibility of getting somebody like Hibbert. The other interesting idea that was out there that somebody thought of is that now, because their flexibility actually increases, obviously their talent decreases, is if they were willing to give up Jamal Crawford, they could give up Jamal Crawford for Paul Pierce as a sign-in trade, and then that would allow them to use their mid-level exception on somebody else.
Yeah, the regular mid-level. I mean, I guess they don't have to deal with being into the tax now.
Congratulations, well, Mr. Ballmer. You don't have to pay the luxury tax.
Yeah, I mean, so, well, let's think about this now. Let's say that they can work it to where they can use their MLE. They can't use the BAE. They used that on Jordan Farmar last year, the biannual exception. You can only use that every other year. So basically the rules, if you used it last year, you can't use it this year. And, you know, Farmar didn't exactly work out too well. So as far as bigs, I mean, you know, now they need a center, obviously. You know, is it going to be Kufos?
I think Kufos.
I mean, Kufos might, his market might be above the mini mid-level. He's not someone who's made a ton of money in his career. That might not do it for him.
Wouldn't they be able to possibly get the regular mid-level?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm talking about. Okay. Even at the full mid-level, I'm not sure that that's enough for Kufos.
Bismack, you know, Biyombo, I think, makes a lot of sense for what they're looking for.
Yeah, that might be enough for Kufos. Actually, why don't we do this? Let's go through who has room left. That'll inform this discussion of who they might go for, because that'll kind of set the market for some of these guys. So here's who has space left still, you know, outside of just the mid-level or more. Boston, same as yesterday, $4.6 million in space, could get to $13.2 if they stretch Gerald Wallace. No reason to do that, really. No one's left on the market that they want. They're already, I think, at 14 guaranteed contracts for next year or so. I wouldn't imagine that they'd use any more. Dallas now is done, with DJ going there and Wes Matthews. They're basically going to have the room exception now, $2.8 million. You know, hope they find a point guard. with that, we could talk about who's left out of the point guard market for them, you know, maybe on tomorrow's show. Denver has some TPEs, probably not going to sign anyone. Detroit's down to about $9 million now. I probably would have rather than Baines, I might have tried to maybe spend a little more of that $9 million and try to get Kupos. You know, that might have been an option, maybe try and spend 6.5 or so on Kupos. Houston has about $7 million or so, but they're probably likely to just stay over the cap. And they don't have their biannual. They'll probably just have the full mid-level. Indiana has used up all their space now, but could still stretch Hibbert or trade him away, and that could open up 10 to 15 million in space. This will shock you. The Lakers still have all of their cap room. Milwaukee is probably around 5 million after they traded away Jared Dudley. The Knicks are down to about 8 million in room or so now after adding Lopez and Aflalo. Orlando is at 18.1 million with Tobias Harris's $6 million cap hold, could get up into the 20s if they were to lose him. Philly, I have them at around 20 million or so after the Thompson and Landry acquisitions. Phoenix has about 8 million. Sacramento, I have at probably in the 15 to 16 range there at 22, and they signed Bellinelli. That's about 6 million a year. The Spurs, 26 million. In space, probably going to split that between Duncan and Aldridge. Toronto still has about 10 million in room, and Utah has 11 million. They could get to 15 if they were to move on from Trevor Booker's non-guaranteed contract, guaranteed date of July 15th. And then Washington still has their mid-level exception left. Those are really the big boys. That's a lot of space out there for what is really relative flotsam left on the market. And it, you know, it shows you, again, why those teams that acted real quick, like, for example, like, look at Damari Carroll, right? People are like, oh, wow, 4 years, $60 million for him. Well, Monte Ellis just got 4 years, $44 million. You know, Wes Matthews is getting almost as much as Carroll got, and he's coming off a torn Achilles. And, you know, I mean, maybe Wes Matthews is a better player than Carroll when they're both healthy. Carroll's a better defensive player. Matthews is a better shooter. Carroll can guard, you know, 1 through 3, which Matthews, you know, doesn't quite do as well. So, I mean, you know, but he's coming off a torn Achilles. So that Carroll contract in some of this context looks a lot better. I think there's going to be a lot of guys who are going to get paid. And I think we're also going to see now what seems pretty clear is with these guys who are left on the market, a lot of teams are just going to be spending up to the cap, maybe not even using their cap space. And that could trigger then the cap next year being even higher because not enough money, again, is going to be spent this year. So we might even see a higher cap than what's projected next year because, you know, teams are just going to kind of sit on their space. Teams are rebuilding. It doesn't make sense to spend a bunch of money on someone like Brandon Bass or something if you're, say, Orlando.
Yeah.
So there may be, you know, more money out there again next year.
And there isn't a situation this year, like, it seemed like Miami, or not Miami, like Cleveland, I've thought of previous LeBron destination, where they kind of did a lot to change that by being a cap team and then spending all the way through the luxury tax. I mean, there isn't a team that can really afford that kind of flexibility. So I think that's another thing that will change the dynamics with all of this. And yeah, I think that the story of the second week will be getting into the trade market for guys on existing contracts, guys like David Lee, guys like maybe even Jason Thompson, as crazy as that is. I think there's a possibility, you know, that if one of these teams is like, hey, you know, we could get him. I mean, here's my question to you with Baines. Would you have rather had Jason Thompson for a year plus a little bit than Aaron Baines at his deal?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, I think Jason Thompson's a better player.
And the other guy I wanted to bring up when you talked about the comparison with Monte Ellis is Chris Middleton. I mean, granted, it's different because he was restricted, but that contract looks amazing, even more amazing when you think about what guys like Monte and Wes Matthews are getting.
Oh, yeah. So good. So good. Another thing that occurred to me was that Luol Deng, who was owed $10 million this year, opted into his player option. I think he could have gotten a lot more than that on the market this year, but, you know, I think he wanted to stay in Miami. I don't know that getting a lot more than that would have put him on a better team. I think at this, he's made a ton of money in his career already, you know, probably almost $100 million in his career. So maybe he's more worried about just staying right on it, what's going to be a good team in Miami. But yeah, I mean, I think he could have at the very least added another 2 years on at $10 million apiece, to his deal. But you know, I mean, there'll be plenty of money on the market next year too for him. So not the end of the world there. All right. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, with the Clippers, it's really Kufos. You know, if they can get down low enough to use the full mid-level, unless they're going to trade, and they don't, of course, you know, they've used up all their first round picks now too, you know, so they can't say, hey, we'll trade you some dead salary to get someone good or do a sign and trade. You know, it's Kufos, it's Biombo, it's those type of guys, unless they can somehow swing it for Hibbert. And, you know, what's going to be the inducement there, you know, other than maybe taking on someone like Felton for the Mavs. And if they do that, then maybe the Mavs can grab a point guard with that. But, Jeremy Lin actually would be, fantastic, I think, for Dallas running some pick and roll. I mean, cause what people don't realize about the Dallas system, and it's going to be even more the case next year now, they're going to have so much shooting. If Matthews can come back, they're going to be impossible to guard in pick and roll. I mean, with Dirk, Matthews, and Parsons, and then DeAndre rolling to the rim. I mean, this is a team that offensively was totally unstoppable for the first half of the year before they got Rondo playing that same system. Now they've got DeAndre, who will be even better at doing that roll stuff than Chandler is. And that system basically is steroids for any point guard, because you got to stick to Dirk and pick and roll, although he's kind of declined a little bit. We'll see whether that still is the case this year. So you got to stick to Dirk on the weak side or in pick and roll as well. You know, you're going to have to collapse in on DeAndre, or he's going to dunk on your whole team. And so with that being the case, yeah, if I am a point guard trying to rebuild my value, I'm all about going to Dallas right now. Like Jeremy Lin, you know, still a guy who can score in pick and roll, would be perfect there. You know, I would love to go there. You know, he's probably the best pick and roll point guard left on the market. I think that is just an amazing fit. Like, that's a great, great point there. I think I would be all about going to Dallas if I were Lin. You know, you get to win, probably run the show. You know, he and Devin Harris, you know, at least get 24 minutes a game in that system. Like, he's going to look awesome.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page, but I think we've given the people enough lawn mowing material. Enjoy your 4th of July.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're out there at the barbecue drinking a beer, you can listen to this. You know, you need to get away from the screaming children, all that stuff. I wonder why I'm still single when I make comments like that, but you know, or at least unmarried. So anyway, yeah, now we're beginning to ramble as usual at the end. You know, we really should just like completely omit like the intro and outro to this show. Like, clearly the weakest part of the show, since I'm not like a professional radio guy. I'm no good at that stuff. So, why don't we cut it off here then? Follow me on Twitter, NateDuncanNBA. I have that Newsbreakers list on Twitter that I think people have been subscribing to. I think they like it pretty well. It kind of cuts out the fluff, except for just people who are actually breaking the major news. Follow Danny LaRue. An iTunes ranking, always appreciated, as we're going to try and look for sponsors to keep this going next year. And, you know, go on RealGM as well. RealGM, our host, has some great tools, including a sortable list of all the remaining free agents for this year and future years. And, you know, you can sort it by points per game, experience, any of these variables. We've been using that a lot as well in preparing these shows. So make sure you check that out as well. And we will talk to you all probably tomorrow. Till then.